Becky Brown, and I am so excited to share with you this month's Club New Life Collective. Here's a little bit of a factoid for Christmas. Christmas celebrates the birth of Christ, which for many is a joyous occasion. But interestingly, Christmas has a history of controversy. In 1659, the Puritan government of the Massachusetts Bay Colony went so far as to outlaw Christmas in order to discourage disorderly behavior that might be offensive to God. Anyone who failed to show up for work or participated in feasting would be fined 5 shillings. The Christmas ban lasted until 1681 and then became an official holiday in 1856. Talk about a Scrooge. I'm so glad that they reinstated it. Christmas, though, is often challenging in one way or another, whether it's the stress of busyness, holiday expectations, or family drama. We hope your Christmas will be void of any disorderly behavior and instead will be a blessing. In preparation for the holiday and not to feel a need to outlaw Christmas, let's listen in as each of the radio hosts address a possible challenge of the season.
Hey everyone, Dr. Sherry here, and I want to wish you a very Merry Christmas. When I was thinking about the holidays, I thought about all the, I would just call it toxic fear and anxiety that we can experience, and instead of the peace of Christmas. And I started thinking about the word peace. Back in the day, the ancient Hebrew, when it was written, it was much like Chinese or Egyptian or hieroglyphics. It was pictures and symbols that would actually add depth to the story. And interestingly enough, the word picture for peace in the ancient Hebrew is to destroy the authority that establishes chaos. Now, think about the holidays, right? And I'm wondering if you would just take a moment with me to write down some of the Christmas chaos that you might be currently experiencing. I just want you to be kind to yourself. Don't judge yourself. Just write it down. You might have some examples like this. Are you struggling this Christmas with who is going to host the event? Your family's grown, kids are grown, now there's grandkids, and traditionally you've done it, but you're worried now about the changes because somebody else is asking to host this year. Are you anxious by the thought of spending time with family members who, honestly, you spend most of the year trying to avoid? Are you stressed with shopping, what gifts to buy? Maybe spending too much or not having enough money or feeling like, oh no, I'm going to go deeper into debt. Or maybe you're overwhelmed altogether by just the busyness and the time constraints, the cleaning, the cooking, you're scared about traveling, family expectations. It's just too much to do in a very small amount of time. What is your chaos? I just want you to write it down. Now, again, remember, what does peace mean in the ancient Hebrew? It means to destroy the authority that establishes chaos. Now, we can take authority. You can take authority. That's the good news. But what does authority mean? When I looked it up, authority actually means the power to make decisions. It also means to direct or make choices about someone or something that's going on. This is the good news. We don't have to wait for somebody else to stop the cray-cray that's going on. It actually starts with us. We can destroy the authority that establishes chaos. And so we can do that. How does that look? Let's look at this. I call this my recalculating your emotional GPS. GPS stands for a generous personal shift. You can recalculate your emotional GPS by shifting in a kind way. So think about hosting. Remember all the wonderful traditions you've had and all the family times, but yet Can you release somebody else in the family to create new places to make memories? That is destroying the authority that establishes chaos by opening it up to someone else. Let me give you another one. Again, your GPS recalculating, generous personal shift is tell yourself the truth. This has to do with seeing family members that you don't normally want to see. I did the math. Do you realize that there are 8,760 hours in a year? That's a lot of hours. And I thought, okay, so spending 3 to 5 hours with family members at Christmas to keep the bridge built, can you do that? Would you be willing to do that instead of worrying about it? Just look at it as just spending some time, 3 to 5 hours, and that's it. Or maybe recalculating your GPS means that you're deciding to spend your holiday with another family or a group of friends that you feel more connected to or you care about. Now, see how that works? You can destroy the authority that establishes chaos. So give yourself this Christmas the ability to choose. Yep, you can give yourself permission for peace this Christmas season. Have a wonderful Christmas and recalculate that GPS to actually find more peace.
Merry Christmas, New Life family. Or should I say Feliz Navidad in Spanish, or Joyeux Noël in French, or Christmas Ki Badheya in Hindi, or Eid Milad Majid in Arabic. Now, listen, I am not fluent in all of these languages or many for that matter, but I wanted to say Merry Christmas in these different languages to express the idea of celebrating a multicultural Christmas. That's what I want to take a few minutes to talk about today. But why? Why would it be important for us to celebrate a multicultural Christmas? Can't we just leave Christmas the way it is? Well, there's a couple of reasons why we want to be open to the idea of celebrating a multicultural Christmas. The first comes straight from Scripture. John 3:16 tells us that for God so loved the world that he gave his one and only Son. In Revelation chapter 14:6, we read that then I saw another angel flying directly overhead with an eternal gospel to proclaim to those who dwell on earth, to every nation and tribe and language and people. We even sing in the old Christmas carol, joy to the world, the Lord has come. Christmas goes beyond the borders of our family traditions. The Christmas goes beyond the borders of our country, our people group. Christmas really is worldwide because we're celebrating the fact that God the Father was willing to send his one and only Son into the world. And so when we celebrate a multicultural Christmas, we are giving life to that idea. We're fully expressing that God sent his Son for the whole world, so that there would be a people from every nation, tribe, language, and family gathered around his throne in heaven, worshiping him forever. So how might you go about celebrating a multicultural Christmas? Well, one of the ways you might do that would be to invite others to join in your celebration, especially those who may not be able to return home, who might not be able to go back to their people group to celebrate Christmas. I think about international students who might be here, especially if you live near a university. There are probably international students who, because how long it would take to travel or the funds that it would require, simply cannot go home. And it would be a wonderful gift to invite them to come to celebrate Christmas with you and your family in your home. Or perhaps refugees. You may live in a large city where there's a large segment of refugees who have fled maybe a war torn country and can't return home. You could invite them to come and celebrate Christmas with you. Another way to celebrate a multicultural Christmas would be to ask others to share with you how they celebrate Christmas in their culture. What are some of the things that they do? And if it's appropriate, humbly ask if you could join in with them, if they could show you some of the ways that they celebrate Christmas in their culture. What this does is it expands our understanding of the worldwide impact of Christmas, the worldwide reach of the Christmas message. Regardless of how you celebrate, how we celebrate Christmas, let us all join together in rejoicing in the good gift that God sent his one and only Son to offer his perfect life as a sacrifice for our sin. That is good news for the whole world, transcending all cultures for his glory. Amen. Merry Christmas, everyone.
Hi, Dr. Jill Hubbard here. I wanted to take a moment to consider how to avoid the depression Christmas blues and focus on the joy of Christmas. For some of us, Christmas is a time of excitement and fun, as we know. But for many, it's a time of dread or even struggle. I have clients each year who we have to strategize because of the anniversaries of disappointment and loss that they go through so that they can cope and manage through the season. There are tons of family issues that come along with the holidays. So, you know, the Uncle Joe who gets drunk at Christmas, or difficulties with certain relationships and we're all thrown together. Lots of family issues, or sometimes it's the lack of family and feeling very lonely. Maybe Christmas was wonderful when you were young and now the magic is gone. I remember when Christmas kind of changed and my kids thought it was so magical, and now it's not quite exactly the same as it once was. But for many, the traditions are gone because family members are gone. I even think about retail workers who are overworked and underpaid. This is not always a fun season for them. And when you're out there in the hordes of shoppers, although a lot is online nowadays, sometimes people are not very nice. So there's lots of reasons why we might be down this time of year, probably some that are much deeper than even what I have mentioned. So what do we do? I think we have to first know ourselves, know our tendencies, and not be overly idealistic in what we're anticipating in terms of the Christmas season, especially the older we get. Okay, how does it usually go? Or what has changed? I think we need to recognize these things. So one of it is managing our expectations. There is a gap between often what we expect and our disappointment or even our depression, right? When expectations don't match reality, we are depressed and disappointed. I've heard someone say recently that we all suffer from a little bit of OCD, but they called it obsessional comparison disorder. So it's easy to get in this time of year into a lot of comparison, and we need to try to squelch those tendencies. So preceding Christmas is the season of gratitude and Thanksgiving, and we need to carry that on through the Christmas season. Turning to be our focus to be more on other people instead of ourselves. So that giving versus receiving. I know it sounds cliche, but it really is helpful. Sometimes if we look outside of ourselves, instead of, needing Christmas to be special for us, how can we make it special for others? Being intentional to create family where there is none, or to include others that you notice are lacking in family and people around them. Lots of people spend Christmas alone, and that can be a sad thing. But let's consider that Christmas is the entire season. And really, the goal is to highlight Christ in Christmas. And so with each passing year of age, I keep thinking, how can I this year make Christ more prevalent, more the focus, and less on the things that we do around Christmas. And so making it more of a season, if Christmas Day, you don't have a lot of people around, there are lots of Christmas events leading up to the day. And so random things, maybe there's a kid's concert at church, show up, go. Take those moments to pause where you're just enjoying and taking in the sights and the sounds and the Word of God. Be in church at Christmas time. Be around people. There's no reason to spend it alone. So I am praying that you all are able to look at yourselves realistically, adjust your expectations, and be intentional in highlighting Christ this year. Merry Christmas to you all.
Hello and Merry Christmas. This is Mark Cameron here. Now, holidays are supposed to be a time of year where gathering with your family, but it can be a reminder of disconnection and loss. Now, I have a blended family, and if you have a blended family, you probably had to spend some holidays without some of your family members around, which can be hard. When my stepdaughter was younger, she would go spend Thanksgiving or Christmas out of state with her dad's side of the family, so we only got to have half of our holidays without her throughout her childhood. But on top of my wife and I having our own blended families, I've had to blend in with families since the year 2000 when I moved from the U.S. Now, some of those times had loneliness, especially when I'd call my family and see them celebrating together without me. But thankfully, I also had times when others invited me in to share the holiday festivities with their families, and I made some good memories, like my first Thanksgiving in the USA, when my friend Jeff, whose dad was a colonel in the Army, snuck me into the largely empty West Point Military Academy on Thanksgiving Day for an unofficial tour. Or Thanksgiving Day 14 years ago, when I was a single dad and I had a friend who invited me to come along with him to his neighbor Greg's house. Now, Greg was in his 50s back then, and he's never been married, but he's got a big house and he's got a big heart, and he loves to invite people who have nowhere to go for a big holiday celebration. And he does this every year. And even after I got married, my family have spent several Christmases with him and other misfits. Now, Greg's hospitality reminds me of the story Jesus told in Luke 14 about a king who invited guests to a banquet. And the people who invited made excuses. And then he told his servants to go out and invite the poor and the needy to come and fill his house. Now, Jesus said, when you give a banquet, don't just invite your relatives and friends who might invite you back, but invite those who cannot repay you and you'll be blessed. And I'm thankful for my friend Greg and his heart to love others and his hospitality that mirrors what this story tells us to do. So here's my challenge to you. If you have a big family to spend the holidays with, look around for someone lonely who you might be able to invite. And if you're lonely, look around for a few other lonely people, and maybe you can create a mismatched family gathering where you make something and share and you spend the holiday together. And who knows, it might be a new holiday tradition. So however you choose to spend the holiday, I hope you have a very Merry Christmas.
Hello, everybody. It's Becky Brown, and I just want to talk to you a little bit about holidays after the loss of a loved one. As many of you know, my dad passed away in June of this year, and it'll be our first Christmas, first Thanksgiving, first New Year's, all of those firsts after we have lost him, you know, and some of you are carrying grief like that as well. You know, the first year after you lose someone, you have a lot of firsts, and it's holidays, it's birthdays, it's anniversaries, and it's a new normal. You've probably heard that term before, and for some of you, it's irritating to hear that term, but it really is significant in your healing process of grief. A couple of things to keep in mind. If you recognize that you're having, you know, a down day or just really feeling the loss of the person on a particular day, talk to somebody about it. It could be a loved one that also is experiencing a loss. It might be a counselor, but connecting with others about the grief or just even talking about the person can help you in this season. Recognize and be aware that grief affects everybody different. We all will experience grief, but we all grieve differently. And so that there's not really a right way to do it, but you can recognize when it may be problematic. If you're spending too much time alone, if you're not attending events because of the loss, it's understandable at some point, but I want to encourage you, take a step in that direction to connect with somebody. Another part of, you know, dealing with these big feelings is the physical. Grief can make you feel so exhausted, and yet it's very important to be able to continue to move your body. And so it could be just making sure that you're taking a walk around the block every day, or maybe, you know, gather with a friend and just, you know, enjoy the outdoors. I know that seems so disconnected from the holidays, but your physical, spiritual, emotional, and mental health are all connected. And in times of grief and in times of loss, of missing someone, we get that impact in all of those areas. We hope that as you go through this season, if this is part of a new normal for you, that you know that we're here for you. Recognize that you will have feelings that may not match the joy of those around you, and that's okay. It won't last forever. And just continue to bring that to safe relationships. And if you need to call a counselor or join a grief recovery group, we can connect you with that help. So even though this is a new normal, I want to wish you a very Merry Christmas and know that the greatest gift in Jesus Christ was received, and that's what we're celebrating. And he knows your pain, and he can hold your heart close even in this joyful season. Merry Christmas.
Hi, I'm Dr. Alice Benton. I want to share some tips with you on how to avoid family drama over Christmas. Unfortunately, as we try to celebrate Jesus' birth, we know that some family disruption is going to rise to the surface. So how can we best prepare for it? I suggest we start with prayer, asking for the Lord's intervention and for his help to best plan how to protect the harmony in our family and in our celebration beforehand. And then try to limit how many Martha activities you get yourself involved in. Honestly, this will be the first year I can finally handle doing Christmas cards, sending them out to my loved ones. We had to put it to the side for years because dealing with our young children was more than enough. Don't go overboard on what Christmas should look like and what you're supposed to do. Let's keep the important focus on the Lord and on family celebration. Find out ahead of time, identify with your spouse if you can, what topics should probably be avoided entirely or minimized. Perhaps politics should not be discussed over the family Christmas celebration. See if you can get support from a couple of stable-minded family members who will help to move the conversation along if you hit those rocky topics that should be saved for another time. It's also okay to say, I noticed we're talking about politics. I'm actually going to change the subject. Have another couple of ideas ready of what you will move the topic of conversation to. I find that expecting that your boat will be rocked over the Christmas holiday then helps you handle it. If you have such high expectations that things will go perfectly, that your children will be delighted with the gifts that you have given them, you're setting yourself up for disappointment. But if you go in knowing that there are going to be some bumps in the road, but we can handle it, it helps you to have that expectation in advance. If you have young children, set up with them your family expectation as well. We tell our children, you're invited to be kind or quiet. If you can't be kind, you better choose to be quiet. And if you can't be kind or quiet, then we'll take a break from you so that they know they'll be sent to their room without a screen for a period of time if they're being rude to anybody else in the family. Prepare to decompress afterwards, hopefully to celebrate how well the family event has gone. Perhaps give yourself a treat for doing a good job at handling it. And I often need a comfort circle from one of my trusted people. My husband is my go-to guy on this. If there has been something disruptive, I'll need his comfort to settle down and to get regulated again afterwards. So I hope that all of these tips will help you to protect the harmony over your family Christmas. We will be praying for you. Merry Christmas.
Hi, I'm Jim Burns, and I want to wish you a very Merry Christmas. You know, as our family has grown and we've added son-in-laws and now grandkids to the mix, we have had to learn to be adaptable with our Christmas traditions. Once our girls got married, we said to them, we understand that you're going to be starting new traditions of your own, and you will, in many ways, have to pull in some other transitions and traditions and, well, you'll have to be involved with the in-laws. So to take any pressure off of them, we said, we'll celebrate Christmas anytime that fits in your schedule, and we are flexible on how we celebrate it. You know what? That took the pressure off. Sure, we had to give up a few traditions that we loved when the kids were younger, but we have found that flexibility is the key, and some of the newer transitions actually are great. One of the transitions that Kathy and I have started doing is moving our gifts toward family experiences as opposed to a new sweater or shoes. It's not cheaper, but the memories are amazing. And we have moved those gifts toward having serious fun together, less about, like I said, that new sweater. It's been a great move. What's most important is to take time to reflect on God's goodness to our family and ministry, and to make sure we take the time to celebrate the birth of Jesus Christ. And after all, the reason for his birth was to save the world and bring hope to all of us. I know that the Christmas season can be stressful, but in the midst of this season, my sincere prayer is that you will find joy being reminded of God's love and having some serious fun with your loved ones. And don't forget to be flexible and adaptable with your celebrations. So Merry Christmas.
Hi, I'm Dr. Jackie Mack Harris. I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist, and I want to talk today a little bit about resetting your holiday expectations. We go into the holidays expecting certain things, and we put expectations on ourselves and others that sometimes dampen our holiday spirit. We're going to have some social interactions, and we might expect that these social interactions are going to go a particular way. Or we may feel like we are expected to show up for every party that is planned. We may feel like we have to go to all of the work events and all of our friends' events. And sometimes we just don't really have the bandwidth or stamina. We make New Year's resolutions. We expect to have big family gatherings. And of course, we want to give and get wonderful holiday gifts. And so in order to reset our holiday expectations, we first need to know what they are. And those are some of the top things that people have expectations about during the holidays. And so for us to reset them, we need to hit the off button, hit the stop button, and then power up again. And that stop moment is a pause to let us take a look at the reality of our situation. So when it comes to social interactions, we need to understand what's our bandwidth. What's our social battery looking like these days? It's the end of the year. We've been working really hard all year. We might have children and they've been involved in a lot of things all year. We might have aging parents that we're caring for, and we've been doing lots of health things and doctor's appointments all year. And now as we're coming towards the end of the year, rather than start to slow down and rest, we begin to ramp up because of all these big expectations. And so check in with yourself and see what your bandwidth is. Then look at the list of holiday events. Look at your calendar and decide how much of your next couple of months you want to spend going to holiday events, and practice using your no. Sometimes we just have to say no to a particular party or engagement because we just don't have the bandwidth. There's just so many other things going on in our life, and we're resetting our expectations. That's going to reset the expectations of others as well. And then holidays bring about these wonderful New Year's resolutions. And so I recommend that you pause and decide, is this necessary or is this a habit? Am I really going to resolve to make a change in my life? And if I am, is there a particular reason why I choose January 1st to do that? Is this really a new start for me, or is this a new shame for me? And decide if you can take that off of your list of to-dos this year. If it's really not something that is a benefit to you, it's just something that just adds more strain and stress, stress and shame to your life, consider taking that off the list. And then family gatherings. Be open to the possibility that everybody doesn't show up, or that people show up who you didn't expect, or that the conversations may not go the way that you want them to go. But if family gatherings are a big part of your holiday expectations, set intentions, talk to your family, have conversations about what you'd like to see happen, and hear from others. Be curious about what they'd like to see happen, and work together to collaborate on a holiday gathering that benefits everyone. And then gifts. Be mindful of your budget throughout the year, not just at the holiday giving time, and so that you can plan ahead for giving the way that you like to give. If gifts is your love language, you may spend more than the average person, but plan for that so that it doesn't become a strain or a stressor on you, but it can be something that you're joyous in being able to be such a giver. But also, don't let this be a time where you add shame. If finances are not there for you to give the way that you would like to give, consider finding some free gifts, maybe giving the gift of time, setting dates to spend time with people or to have experience with people, rather than needing to spend a bunch of money. So think about what you expect for the holidays. Set intentions for what you truly desire. If your expectations are over the top or causing you to feel burdened by them, then review them, reset them, change them, reduce them. You get to be in control here. You get to set your own intentions and your own expectations so that you have the kind of holiday season that you would want to have. I wish you peace and love and light and a merry, merry Christmas.
Hi, Chris Williams here, and I want to wish you a very, very merry Christmas. I also want to talk a little bit about why I love this season so much. Of course, I love the traditions. I love the lights, the trees, the parties, and especially the food, and just time with friends and family. Most importantly, I love the reminder that this time of year provides me in my spiritual walk. In my faith, what informs me so well in this season is that Jesus, in all of his infinite wisdom, care, grace, love, truth, pointed right at reality and moved straight into it. Because this season comes with paradoxes and the paradoxes of life. On one side is this great sense of hope and festivity and celebration and family and connection. But on this other side is the reminder, oftentimes for many of us, of losses and grief and disappointments and frustrations and heartaches. And we just know life on earth contains both of these experiences. And sometimes I think we can fall in the trap that to celebrate Christmas well is to ignore the heartache and to only join in the festivity. But the truth of the matter is that the first Christmas reminds us that Jesus didn't just come with songs of hope, but came with songs of lament as well. In addition to that, pointed himself straight at the most difficult realities of life and planted himself there so that truly we can say Emmanuel, God with us. So whether this season for you comes with a lot of excitement and joy and connection and festivities, or whether it comes with a lot of heartache and struggle and disappointment, or a combination of both, what I wish for you more than anything else is Emmanuel, God with you. Merry Christmas, and thanks for being a part of New Life.
I hope you picked up some ideas on how to avoid stressful times and to make this Christmas focused on Christ's arrival and how his life has impacted yours. It truly is the reason for the season. Now we're going to go to a couple of Christmas calls from past years. First, we're going to hear from Steve, Mylan, and Mark as they weigh in on a marriage dispute over whether it's okay to enjoy Santa Claus. Then two calls are addressed to Chris, Jill, and Mark, the effect of a husband's alcohol addiction at Christmas, and then the mother's broken heart over an estranged child and the lack of response when sending Christmas gifts. Let's listen.
Meredith's calling us from Washington, D.C., WAVA is that great station there in D.C. Hello there, Meredith. How are you?
Hi, how are you?
Excellent.
I'm good.
Good.
Good, good. So I wanted to, I am conflicted. You did say that's a big word right now, so I wanted to make sure that I stayed on that. I'm feeling very conflicted in reference to the holidays, but specifically Christmas. I mean, I think with Halloween, I pretty much know there's nothing good about that. I don't need to celebrate that with my family. But my husband loves.
No, wait just a second. Can you just stop right there? Why do you think there's nothing good about Christmas?
Well, Halloween, nothing's good about Halloween. I'm thinking everything is, in my opinion, good about Christmas. But I'm conflicted about the, should I let the kids see Santa? Should I do the elf on the shelf? You know, I'm conflicted about that. Because in my mind, I'm thinking those are distractions. And, you know, the kids don't really look at it like, oh, we're celebrating Jesus. We're celebrating the birth of Christ. This is a time of giving. They're thinking about, oh, you know, I got to write my Christmas list down because I want to get it to Santa. And when is the elf coming? So those are the things I'm trying to tell my husband. And he's like, they're kids. You got to let them be kids. And it's okay if, you know, they indulge in Santa and stuff. And for me, I'm conflicted because I would love nothing more for them than to have fun and enjoy the holiday with their friends. But I'm also trying to be obedient and make sure that I'm doing the right thing by them and God's eyes.
Okay. All right. I'm going to let Mylon crank us up here. He's dealt with this for many years with many kids. I'll just make this one comment. What I hate is when you take a secular thing and try to make it Christian, like Elf on a Shelf. You know, you don't want to do like Apostle on a Waffle or something like that. You either go there. But Mylon, your thought about why is it that we can celebrate Santa and the other
Apostle on a Waffle. Okay. Well, you know, he lives near Waffle House. Okay. There's one on every corner in Indiana, you know, and we don't have Waffle Houses.
And Waffle Houses are owned by a Christian. So that's a pretty cool thing.
Okay.
All right.
All right. Now, speaking of rabbit trails, Meredith, we certainly got off onto one here. But you are talking about something that is a powerful issue during the holidays. And the fact that families are divided internally, just like yours with you and your husband, as to where will we put our emphasis. How old are your kids, by the way? Don't tell me 17, 18, and 19.
13, 8, 2, and 1. I've got 3 girls and a boy.
Okay. So, you know, it is so difficult to go through the Christmas season without seeing a picture of Santa Claus. I mean, he is everywhere. I don't care where you look, you can't avoid. And we used to call Santa the Christmas clown. You know, he was a clown, and we would always say, well, you know, some people really enjoy having Santa at Christmas time, and we can understand that, but this is really the celebration of Jesus and the birth of Christ.
Right.
So we would try to blend it and just say we wanted to acknowledge the reality that Santa is this really almost omnipresent being during the holidays. But the reality is what is Christmas all about? And, you know, your 1-year-old isn't going to get it, but your older kids, of course, will. And I just think you're going to have to just simply be as honest with your husband as you are with us and just say, can we find some sort of a compromise here? And just really ask him, to be more serious about this, because here's the deal developmentally. We implant ideas into kids' heads early on, and that because they're so impressionable and they absorb so much and they remember so much, we're actually deeply influencing them. And it's not just that they're kids and that's what kids like to do. We're actually putting a false imprint into their memory system. Yeah. And I think we need to be very careful of that.
Agree.
Mark, you have any thoughts here?
Yeah, and I see a lot of people who conflict with this, and I think it's possible to have both, mm-hmm. To have the excitement, and of course it's hard to get away from it because it's you know, as Mylan was saying, right? You go into stores and if they go into school, it's being talked about all the time. There's this excitement, and of course kids do get excited about the gifts and the magic and things like that. But then I hear your tension with the real message of Christmas. And I think it's important to have both. And I wonder if you and your husband are struggling here because of the different traditions you may have had growing up. And the one thing I was talking to my wife yesterday, our kids are 17. And we were just kind of reflecting a little bit about how we've done growing up. And I said to the one thing that I would have liked to have done more specifically around Christmas and the holidays was to do more traditions, because I think traditions lead to family bonding. So I personally think it's okay to have both, but it's finding that balance, right? And maybe right. You read some family members read a little part of the story of Christmas during the 12 days. And so I think it's possible right. to have both here for your kids, especially like Mylan's saying that, you know, some of the younger ones, they're not really going to fully get it here. But I think it's worth a chat with your husband about the different traditions that he grew up with, what was important to him, why he really enjoyed those, and you share the traditions that you grew up with him, and then try and find a balance, try and find something that you guys are going to do together for your family, right? And to do family bonding.
And I have to tell you, it was a traumatic, literally traumatic experience for me when I learned that Santa wasn't real. And I think you have to be really careful about whenever a child asks you, is Santa real? I tell you, to lie to a child about that is a problem. Mm-hmm. Anyway, that's just my thing. But anyway, Santa, I mean, here's a guy. He doesn't shave. He's overweight. He smokes. He smokes a pipe. Many times kids sit on the lap of one that smells like alcohol. He's obviously never watched What Not to Wear. So, you know, that to make it all about that, that should not be the focus of Christmas.
Absolutely.
And if you're not really overly talking about the other, you know, you mentioned tradition. One of our traditions, everybody crawls up in our bed, and that's where we read the Christmas story, and that I love that tradition, and it's just something that we never ever want to stop talking about. That
we're going to go to Grace in Los Angeles, California, listening on KKLA.
Oh, hello. I have been married to a man who has battled with controlling his alcohol consumption since. You know, before we were married, and he was saved kind of right before he accepted Jesus as Savior. And when we were courting, kind of when we started talking, and then it was like we got engaged really fast. And I knew it was something he struggled with, but I believed as a pretty new Christian, like, well, I mean, Jesus is going to set him free. And then first year of marriage, it was like, whoa, that did not go as planned. And I had some expectations, and anyhow. So I struggled, and right now, every year we go back, we're both from out of state, and every year we go back home for Christmas, and we go for about a week. And at this point, we have two small children, and it's, you know, throughout the week, it's not very severe. It comes in waves of like, oh, here's my boundary, and the boundary is respected with the drinking.
I was going to say, is this in reference to his alcohol use?
Yeah, with alcohol, it's like, and then it gets pushed. It gets pushed and pushed and pushed. But when we go on vacation, there's no boundaries. This is vacation.
and so Grace, kids. Let me ask you this. How is his alcohol use impacting you?
It's just been, you know, like the trust is, you know, the lack of respect and just feeling very, like, I mean, we have had talks of separation.
No. Hold on. Let me go back to the question. How is it affecting you? You said there's a lack of trust. There's disrespect.
It definitely feels like, you know what? Honestly, I want to connect with my husband. I want to, like, you know, I feel like there's...
So Grace, can I help? Can I help? Us. Can I help you out?
Yeah.
Here's how it's affecting. Okay. Here's how it's affecting you. It's creating a tremendous amount of fear. Broken trust equals fear. That shows up as anxiety, and probably shows up as a little bit of either avoidance and or control. That you're sitting with a lot of frustration. That you're wondering and wrestling around if he respects you and you respect him. And you're also wondering, because of the lack of connection in your marriage, is if he actually loves you or if you're lovable.
Yeah. And like, I know it's so funny. I feel like God, you know, puts you together with, I mean, I don't know if this is for everyone, but it's like my biggest fears are wrapped up in my husband and my biggest love. But, you know, I grew up in a home of abandonment, and the only thing I really knew about my dad was he was an alcoholic, and, you know, and he was.
And Grace, there is this really, really, really weird thing that goes on inside of us. I don't really think it's all that conscious, but it's strong. And here's the strength. In our adulthood, we're constantly looking to have a corrective experience, i.e. fix our childhood. So what we end up doing is we end up creating the similar scenarios from our childhood, especially in our marriages and our relationships, and trying to fix it, not realizing that we are powerless against the whole situation to begin with, and that we just need it a different way. Not the same way, right? So what's the question for us today? How can we help you?
So, so we go back for Christmas, and I'm just wondering, you know, it's been 4 years, and I mean, I'm an optimist, but a realist, you know, like I, at this point, understand, you know, it's out of my control and it's really tricky. I was in Al-Anon and they'd say, don't, you know, set boundaries you can't keep, but it's like at Christmas time, is there any boundary? How do I even go about talking to an alcoholic about, you know, like,
well, let me start with a great, big, grand, scary, truthful statement. Alcohol use for you and being married to me does not work, period.
Yeah.
Right?
Like
we don't know if that's going to do anything, but what I want you to hear with that, Grace, is I want you to hear the simplicity and the strength of it. Is that statement true?
Well, you know, I put that out there.
No. Is that true for you? I'm not asking if it does anything for him. I'm asking it, is it true for you?
So the question is like, can I be married to someone who consumes alcohol?
No, that's a different question. His alcohol use and being married for you doesn't work. And it's not a question, it's a statement. Is that statement true?
Oh, it's not working for me in the marriage.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
Okay, that's your starting point. Jill, what do you think?
I think that is a great starting point, Grace. And I am so glad that you are involved in Al-Anon, because that's exactly where you need to be, to have the ongoing support and to help you stop doing all of these emotional, mental gymnastics with him and trying to get him to comply, but looking more, as Chris said, what works for you and what doesn't work for you. That's a boundary, right? Giving him a boundary, you can't control that.
Mm-hmm.
But this doesn't work for me. Okay, so if it doesn't work for you, then what does that look like? It may look like when he's drinking, he gets to do it by himself and the rest of you go off and do the activity.
Mm-hmm.
That he doesn't get to come and join and wreak havoc or have you feel disrespected. Even if it's subtle things that maybe other family members aren't aware of. No. If you'd like to join us and you haven't been drinking, great. We'd love to have you.
Yes.
However, it doesn't work for me with you drinking.
Yeah. And so you have to have that conversation with him. I would recommend trying to do that when he is sober, obviously. Yes. But if you
so that he'll remember.
Yeah, but if you can't, you might have to write a letter. And you might have to write these things down, but you have to have some kind of firm boundary here, because when you don't have firm boundaries, when you say we might separate or, well, it's Christmas, I'll let you do it, that's something called intermittent reinforcement happens, where sometimes the boundary is held and sometimes the boundary is not held. So the person doesn't know when the boundary is going to be held or not. So they'll just keep pushing the boundaries. And he doesn't have the internal motivation to stop drinking, so he needs external motivation created. And you need, you know, as Jill is saying, you need that Al-Anon support to help you, because right now you're in this level of helplessness. And I wonder again if some of that, you know, Chris was talking about our childhoods, right? I wonder if some of that is transference from when you were a kid. You couldn't do anything about your dad's alcoholism, so now you believe, I can't really do anything about my husband's alcoholism. And really, you can.
Yes.
But it's learning to be able to, you know, communicate that firm boundary and then follow through with that.
And I think there's a key distinction there. And Jill, you were really hitting on it, because this is, I think, where a lot of people get confused with boundaries. Mm-hmm. And let me give you an example of me parenting my children. So let's say my son is jumping on the couch and being crazy, and he could break something, including his own bones, you know. And I say, you need to stop doing that. You can't jump on the couch. People say, oh, well, that's a boundary. I'm like, no, that's not. Mm-mm. That's a request. A boundary is not what I'm asking him to do. A boundary is something I'm going to do.
Right. It has a limit line.
Yes.
And then there's a consequence for crossing the limit line.
Exactly.
Otherwise, it's not a boundary.
Yes. So a boundary would be, if you continue to jump on the couch and be crazy, I will take away, remember, the me, I. This is what I will do. I will take away your video games for the rest of the day. That's the boundary. So in all of this, Grace, inside of you was this, well, how can I get him to? And I'm like, I would love for that to be the case, but that's not. First principle of recovery, we are powerless against, right? However, in gaining our power back is saying, this is what I'm going to do. I think that there needs to be much greater clarity on what Grace is going to do. That's why we start with a starting point of alcohol abuse and being married to me does not work. What is my role as a mother whose child has no contact without any explanation? She says, I'm still sending gifts for birthday, Christmas, etc., but zero responses. It is painful and my cup has run dry trying to make sense of what feels like a betrayal. Please help me understand my role during this painful time. I am in counseling. I'm going through Jim Burns' book, Doing Life with Adult Children, but it doesn't quite apply to my situation. But I do, she says, I do highly recommend the book. But she's just in this another estranged situation.
Yeah, estrangement is so painful and so difficult. And Delaney, our heart goes out to you. Good for you that you're letting your adult children know or child know that you're still there and you're sending the gifts. It's really hard when you get nothing back. And while the gifts are nice and good, the silence is saying we don't want contact.
Yeah.
I wonder if you've reached out, though, in the form of a letter.
That's
because I think it's important to put words to those actions as well, and to let the person, your child, know that you are here, that you are wanting relationship, that you're getting the message that they are not, and you are trying to understand that. And while respecting that they need distance, you also would like the opportunity to work on what has gone wrong in the relationship, and that you would highly value being able to know some things that have not gone well for them, and that you could work on.
Yeah.
And that you would love the opportunity to repair at some point, and that you realize you have areas to grow as well.
Yeah, I think that's really good.
Yeah, I wish we had Delaney to ask some questions to, because I wonder if we could help her, you know, get a little bit of insight as to what may have gone wrong. But when you've tried everything, what you're saying, Jill, is that's the only thing really that's available to us is mm-hmm. to write that letter and to be humble about it. Don't talk about yes. your hurts in there. You know, no. mm-hmm. hopefully you'll get a chance to talk about your hurts, but it's not up front. It's not right now. Mm-hmm. It's the letter really is learning just to invite and saying, hey, I love you. I want to be in relationship with you. If I've done something to hurt you, I want to be able to acknowledge that and repair that. And I'd love to have the opportunity to hear you out. And that's what the letter
right.
is.
And I'm willing to not defend myself.
Correct.
I just yeah. want to hear your position.
Right. And that makes it safe for them mm-hmm. to consider. And sometimes you might not get something back right away, but it may take a little bit of time to sink in. And if Delaney's son is married, maybe it's even reaching out to his spouse, mm-hmm. his wife.
Yeah, and I'm thinking two things. One, to reiterate the letter writing, because mm-hmm. it provides them a living artifact.
Yes.
Beyond mm-hmm. just a conversation that you can forget or construe. Mm-hmm. You know, and so and I think the other aspect of that for Delaney is that if you're sending gifts, oftentimes we can send gifts to stay in hopes that they'll reach out to us. Mm-hmm. And I think keep sending gifts, but change the intention. Mm-hmm. The intention is for you, Delaney, to say that I'm doing this because I still love you and I'm working through this painful experience mm-hmm. and staying in prayer. And hopefully, and I would say this, we all have a comfort magnet inside of us seeking safety. And our parents are usually the primary source of that early on in life. But there's mm-hmm. something about that throughout our life that we pray for this in the long game that eventually they'll come back around. So mm-hmm. we hold out hope for that. But in the current situation, what is your role is to love them well. But I would definitely go with that letter writing. Mm-hmm.
And then if you get no response, you know, wait a while, wait mm-hmm. at least 6 weeks to 2 months, and then maybe reach out again. I had sent a letter. I don't know if you received it. I'm looking for an opportunity to yeah. learn and grow.
And then sometimes it could also be finding a neutral third party mm-hmm. to help you with that, because mm-hmm. your son, Delaney, may feel more comfortable communicating something to the neutral third party that could go back to you, and that
yes.
could give you a clue as to how receptive he is or what has
right.
happened.
Is there another family member
right.
that he is in
exactly.
contact with?
Exactly. Yeah. Maybe a sibling, maybe mm-hmm. an aunt or an uncle, mm-hmm. someone.
You know, yes. this just reminds me of how important communication and conversation is. Mm-hmm. Words matter, you know, and we see that God has given us language for a reason mm-hmm. and utilized language throughout time. And because one of the things that we tend to do is that when people give us the ghost response, mm-hmm. I like to say it like this. They're giving us blank sheets of paper to write really bad stories on.
Yes.
you know,
yeah.
And usually that is the experience when we don't hear back from them. When it goes radio silent, we take out our pen inside of our head and then we just start mm-hmm. writing out mm-hmm. terrible stories about ourselves, terrible stories about the other person. And we've broken off communication and broken trust with that. Mm-hmm. And so, again, a huge reminder that it's important to engage in critical conversations and to communicate, especially with those that we do life closely with.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've had a lot of calls today that have been difficult ones. And they're not easy answers. And, right. and there's potentials with them where they don't resolve. Mm-hmm. And when that happens, we're challenged within ourselves to go back to how do I accept this situation and what can I do to grow from the situation mm-hmm. that where things are out of my control.
Finally, we're going to hear from Dr. John Townsend as he shares on how to maximize the holidays, followed by J.J. West and his insight on finishing the race.
Hi, I'm John Townsend. You know, the holidays are upon us, and we often have mixed feelings about the holidays. I mean, there are some people that are nothing but woo-woo, and it's fantastic, and have no ambivalence or anxiety about it, but most of those people need medication because, you know, holidays can be the best of times, and they can be the worst of times, and they can kind of be everything in the middle. I mean, celebration's great, and the Bible's full of stories about how God helps his people to celebrate anything from feast days to holidays to wonderful times to be close to each other. And you know, with the holidays, it's sort of like the time to reminisce and see people you haven't seen for a long time and to worship God and feel close to him for whatever that holiday is. And also to have, you know, great activities and fun traditions and this sort of thing. That's all the good stuff, and that's why we need feed them, and they're good, they're kind of a good encourager for our lives. But then there's another side to it, the downside, and it has to do with oftentimes either things in the past or things upcoming in the future. So this talk is going to be about how to really maximize the holiday times, either about things that are in the past or the future, and it'll really make a big difference. So let me just give you some principles. First off, plan. Now, I know if you're a very spontaneous person, that planning's not helpful, but I'm telling you, holidays come like a train down the track, and they're going to hit you and not do good things to you unless you have some planning. So this has to do with what they call in management circles is managing expectations. If you plan the people you'll be with, what the events are, what you're going to cook, what somebody else is going to cook, what the presents are and all that, things go so much better. You know, God is not a God of chaos. He's a God that has order. So give yourself a break and just sit down with a piece of paper or something and start thinking out, what do I want the holidays to consist of? Because here's what's going to happen. If you don't make some planning for the holidays, meaning some things that I will do and some things that I don't want to do, the holidays are going to eat you up. There's always going to be somebody who wants to be doing something with you, or there's going to be an activity. And sure, you want to do as much as you can, but you got to plan for the downtime where you can rest and just be happy as much as for the uptime. So plan, measure, and manage expectations. Another one has to do with the past. You know, there's in the psychological research, the clinical research, there's a real thing called anniversary depression and anniversary grief. And it has to do with not the Christmases that are or the Thanksgivings or New Year's that are, but the ones that were. And people sometimes have losses, like people that I loved aren't around, or maybe the family is not what the family was last year or the last 2 years. And you really have to respect that, and you really have to be able to have bandwidth for that. Don't let it catch you unawares. And what I always tell people who know there's going to be a hard anniversary, I've got a very close relative who's got her son passed away at around this time of the year. And so she's really good about planning for the people she can talk to, the reflective time she can have, the people who will comfort her. That doesn't take away from all the great times, but it helps her to, like, know that there's a time for her to feel what she needs to feel that's not going to, like, ruin the rest of her holiday. So put some structure and some comforting people in anniversary depression. Now, there's also the future. You might have some really kooky people in your life. Hey, that's called family, right? And so there might be some people that you love and can't wait to be with. Then there's some people like, you know, Uncle Harry, who's always drunk and, you know, always saying inappropriate things. You kind of feel sort of toxic to you. And what are you going to do about him? Well, God bless us all. I don't believe in telling people they can't come at all to anything unless they're so toxic and so dangerous they'll just ruin everything. There are those kind of people, but they're kind of in the minority. But with the other people, make sure that you say hi to them. But don't try to fix them or answer their silly questions or whatever. Give them a minute or two of how's life. And before they have a chance to become crazy and inappropriate, go to the other side of the room and talk to somebody you care about and love and this sort of thing. So be nice to them, but don't give the bandwidth to let them ruin things for you. Those little tips will make all the difference. So hope that's helpful. Hope you have a great holiday. And for any kind of question, for any kind of help, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE.
Anybody who knows me knows that I like to do lots of activities, outdoor stuff. And for the last 15 or so years, I've been running 5, 10, 15, 20K and half marathon and marathon races. I've done some obstacle course races, some triathlon, some other things. And I enjoy them. And I have actually on my wall behind the camera, if I could turn the camera around, you could see my wall of fame. I have my medal rack where all the finisher medals are, and it's great to look at. There's one in particular that I want to highlight. So a couple years ago, in fact, December 19th, 2021, I don't know if you can see, but this is the Mount Dora half marathon. This was by far my worst half marathon ever. I try to run at least one half marathon a year. This one was my slowest. It was horrible. For whatever reason, the months leading up to it, I had switched my training regimen to less cardio and more resistance training, more weight training. So I hadn't been doing a lot of cardio. And for those who don't know, who aren't from this area, Mount Dora is a particularly hilly area. Now, in Florida, we don't have a lot of hills. Mm-hmm. But in Mount Dora, there's a lot of hills. And where I live, there's not a lot of hills. And so I had not been training hills. And I knew that there were some hills. I didn't know how many. So the first, like, 7 miles of the race is nothing but hills. And my legs were shot. So by mile nine or 10, one of my trainers was running with me. And she's like, hey, do you mind if I go on and finish without you? I'm like, no, that's totally fine, because I was really slowing her down a lot. And so I'm like, yeah, that's fine. But I started cramping so bad in the last few miles that if I would take more than a couple steps of running pace, jogging pace, not even running pace, my feet and my legs would seize up with cramps. Oh. And so I had to pretty much walk the last 2.5-3 miles of the race. And it was miserable. And it was super hot that day, even though it was December 19th. It was this freakish, really hot December day in Florida. And it was awful. It was miserable. But I finished. And so I'm proud of that medal because I didn't give up. I didn't quit. I could have, but I didn't quit. Mm. And there's a verse in Scripture, 2 Timothy 4:7-8. Paul says to Timothy, I have fought the good fight. I have finished the race. I've finished the race. I've remained faithful. I've kept the faith. And there's a crown stored up for me. Mm. So I want to ask our listeners, what's the fight that you're presently facing that you want to give up? You want to throw in the towel. You want to say, you know what? It's just too hard. Would you keep going in order to get the crown that God has set for you? Don't give up. And you need other people around you to do that.
I hope something that you heard encouraged you as you go into this season. I just want to let you know some upcoming events that we're going to have. Every Man's Battle is December 6th through 8th in Dallas, Texas. January 10th through 12th in Atlanta, Georgia. We haven't been in Atlanta in a long time, so let your friends know that we're going to be in town. Intimacy and Marriage is February 14th through 16th, Orange County, California. Maybe you'll join us at one of our intensives this year. It could be a great weekend for you. Thank you again for your faithful support. It's been a ray of hope in difficult times for so many people. You know, at New Life, we are here to help people in their most distressing times. And some of you, that's the reason why you're part of Club New Life, because we helped you. And now you want to make sure somebody else has that same hope and help for their life, whether it is through a Christmas season and or maybe sometime throughout the year. You are making a difference. I hope that you experience the joy of Christ. That's why we're celebrating Christmas. There's hope for another day, for another year, because God has made a way. And I pray that you experience the joy of Christ this season. Thanks again for being part of Club New Life.